Thank you very much. I'd like to thank the organizers for giving me the opportunity to talk, especially coordinating the physical scheduling. And also I'd like to thank everybody for staying till the end of the day for me. Hopefully I can entertain somehow. Okay, so I'd like to talk about the social factor problem. So let me give a brief review of what has been the problem. So classification of SD transfer factors, what it is basically SD transfer factors are just unique at isomorphic isomorphism, so they are nothing to classify, but then you can think about non-trivial inclusion of one another. And then actually one of the most important invariants is so-called principal graph, that if you have a subfactor with finite index, finite depth, then you can create a so-called principal graph, which is a bipartite graph. And let me briefly tell you what principal graph contains as an information subfactor that you start with. So generically, you just start from a bipartite graph, like for example, like this. Then for such a graph, you can define a adjacency matrix. What I'm doing here is that basically, you have rows and columns as many as the number of vertices, and then each entry, you have a number, which is the number of the edges connecting those vertices. And then, actually, for such matrices, you have there's a very nice theorem called Perovskite's theorem that says that basically, there is a unique eigenvalue so that you can take the eigenvector at normalization to a vector which has all real number as entries, and the eigenspace of such eigenvalue is one-dimensional, and also that eigenvalue is a positive number, but that has the largest absolute values among all the eigenvalues of the matrix. And we call such eigenvalue Perron-Frobenius eigenvalue, and the vector to be vector Perron-Frobenius eigenvector. And the information you can get about the factor from this graph is that, in fact, actually, if you look at the square of the Perron-Frobenius eigenvalue, then that coincides with the index of the subfactor that you started with. So, in a way, through this, you can think about the classification subfactor from a point of view of sorting out by indices, and then think about possible graphs that could arise as principal graphs. So now that I show you what kind of graphs appear as a principal graph, for example, if you have surfactors with index less than 4, then the graphs are going to be Dinky diagrams, where this D actually appears only even case and E7 doesn't appear. And also, when the index is 4, then you get extended Dinky diagram. And you have also surfactors made from Hopper algebras or finite groups, and these have index from integer, and the graphs depend on each case, but they are also computed. Well, especially for the case of finite group cross product, you get graphs indexed by the group elements and irreducible representations. And also, when you have quantum group, I meant to write UKCLN, but anyway, so generically, when you have UKCLN, then you can construct a subfactor, and they all have an index up larger than 5, and the principal graph, that, for example, for special case of SL3, you have this red line looking like principal graph, so you have graphs like that. And then there is also a sort of special subfactor, Gutmann-Rabe subfactor, and that subfactor has index 3 plus square root of 3, which is about 4.73, blah blah, as you may remember from elementary school. So now, Then the thing is that these sub-factors, as I listed, are more or less related to some known mathematical objects such as groups, finite groups, or like quantum group, or also Hopf algebra. Then it's just for Gutmann-Rabe joint sub-factor, but this is sort of a combination of these known objects in some way. So then you might wonder then if there is any sub-factor that don't have any sort of obvious association with this object. And then actually if you notice, I have this less than 4 and equal to 4, and then these are discrete case, and these guys have larger than 5, this has 4.7. Then the question, you can approach this question by thinking about whether there is any sub-factor, or finite depth sub-factor with the index between 4 and this 3 plus square root of 3. And indeed, actually, it was thought by Hoyerup. If I say it right, Hoyerup. And here is the candidate of the possible principal graph given by Uffe. Actually, I'm running out of voice now. So these are the possible graphs. Oh, I forgot to write the indices. These are of course pairs of principal graph and joint principal graph. And the first one has parameter in there. The second one, I just sort of isolated the case. The third one, I didn't bother to write because it was already killed by Dietmar Bisch, and so I just I called it B. And so that was a candidate given in 91, and then already quite a while ago, I and Uffe proved that for the case of k equal to 3 of this first series, and this E case, this sporadic case, they actually do appear as a principal graph of a sub-factor. And then now, remaining problem is this, and then, like I said, this is killed by Bisch, so they don't appear as principal graph. And then the remaining problem is whether this gamma case appears for the case when k is larger than 0. And now, so here is a progress chart in that direction. And actually, I should have done that anyway. So, now almost about a little bit before we proved that E and gamma zero appears as principal graph, Ikeda, was a student at Tokyo University, he made a numerical computation to verify that actually the initial connection sitting on gamma one pairs actually should satisfy flatness axiom, which I didn't explain what it is, but anyway. So it is very likely that gamma one pair actually do exist as a principal graph, but it's not proven yet, and I didn't prove yet, and it's open. Then also, now, there are like some obstructions. For example, we can think about how Dietmar kills these B cases. And then actually Uffe tried if this gamma graphs are also killed by the same method, and actually he verified that they do survive with that criterion. And also this graph of this on this four graph of gamma graphs, there are also valid bilinear connection. So basically, except for flatness, there is no obstruction for these guys to not exist. Obstruction to exist. Sorry. So basically, and also another thing is that you might wonder if we can somehow stretch the method we use for showing the existence of gamma zero and E to do something about this larger case, but actually it somehow, well, so far we I don't know, and probably Fred doesn't know either how to apply it. So then for many years there was no progress in this direction. But then actually some time ago I need to check before talking about the forgot. Like a couple of years ago, I think it was next week or last week, they have this sick data, and this statement is not the main part of their result or anything, but basically they prove something equivalent to saying that if some number is an index of a factor, then that has to be a psychotomic integer. What that is, psychotomic integer is an algebraic integer that is sitting in some psychotomic field. And this is actually, in fact, what I have nothing against Ettinger's paper, but it's pretty easy to show what this segment, because they have a lot bigger goal in this paper, and it's not their main part of the thing, so I think they don't get offended if I say this. But this is, in fact, very easy. From the theorem by Gang, I forgot to check what the year was, but also several years ago, saying that if you have a modular tensor category, then the entries of this matrix, is all lie in some psychotomic field, like all of them at once in some psychotomic field. A psychotomic field. From that, you can just play with a graph to show that for this generic subfactor, index has to be psychotomic integer, and I mean it has to be finite depth. But so in a way, this is sort of the essential part. And so, but then that sort of to me like it looks like some sort of technical theorem, and it might appear like abstract nonsense, but it happens to be actually a very, very strong condition. And now, how do we deal with this? How do we utilize this fact by these people? Now, there is a classical theorem by Kroeker Weber saying that an algebraic integer is psychotomic if and only if the Galois group of the minimum polynomial is abelian. Okay? So that will mean that actually if you first of all compute the minimum polynomial of this number, and if the Galois group is not abelian, then that means that it cannot be psychotomic integer. And this was the approach that I had last year, that I could manage to show that actually for this gamma graph up to certain size, starting with gamma larger than 1, they are not realized as a principal graph. This is using the fact that yes, so there is so-called discriminant of a polynomial, and there is a theorem by some number theories saying that if a discriminant has no square number as a factor, then the Galois group has to be symmetric group. So of course, symmetric group, if the degree of the polynomial is large, then they are all non-abelian. So basically, I could just compute a bunch of discriminant, but then I have this limit in a computation. Indeed, the problem is that basically you can generalize this because, for example, suppose we might manage to show that gamma 100 is not psychotomic, still we have absolutely no reason to assume that gamma 101 is not principal graph either from this method. It might appear suddenly. So it's pretty difficult to compute discriminant of large polynomials. And another thing also is that we have to come up with this minimum polynomial, and it's also difficult to prove that it's irreducible. Even though actually, as far as we stick to this discriminant method, it was actually pointed out by Theodor Banker that as long as the discriminant of a polynomial that contains a minimum polynomial as a factor, then as long as you can show that that's square free, then the discriminant of the minimum polynomial also has to be square free. But on the other hand, that's quite great, but then still discriminant computation is pretty hard. And so now, before going to the next approach, let me show you how these polynomials actually look like. So it's suddenly the font changed because I had to return the other pen. next day I got was very, very sick. So now, adjacency matrix of this, let me actually bring it back to this graph, that's probably better. So we are talking about this graph. An adjacency matrix of that graph, well, this is actually corner of that, it's kind of except for this part, it's sort of very, very punctual, right, as you notice, regular. And so now, for basically, we want to compute the minimum polynomial of the square of the Perron Frobenius eigenvalue, and then that's actually the Perron Frobenius eigenvalue of this matrix multiplying this transpose of this and this guy. And then it is very easy to check right if you do the computation that all of them are this x minus 2 square factors all of them, so you can easily get rid of that part. And then actually also when k if k is 1 more than 3, then it also is factored by x minus 1. So we can think about this part, and this doesn't look like irreducible, meaning there is no obvious factor that we can even eliminate. By the way, so this Q polynomial determined by this recursive formula, well, inductive formula, or I don't know, whichever, recursive formula. And the thing that these polynomials are pretty ugly. For example, Q3 looks like this, and it's pretty ugly. So of course, I mean, well, RK sometimes is maybe a bit smaller, but still discriminant is pretty hopeless to compute. And this historical remark is that there have been some computation on discriminant on ugly polynomials, and it was done for a bunch of polynomials by Schur. So I had to go to this Schur, this Berge or something, to read German paper to see if I could use any of the method that he used, but it didn't work. Now, but then, this is ugly, but in fact, actually, you can do some nice change of variable, which appeared in some Jones paper, but also it appears in a lot of graph theory paper. This was also pointed out by Annika, but if you do this change of variable, then actually it becomes nice. As you see, all the coefficients are plus or minus, and the rule is pretty clear that just basically every four of them has four term has plus and the rest are minus. So it looks like wonderful, but still we can't compute a discriminant of that. Now, first of all, for me it wasn't clear what it means. Suppose we knew the discriminant of this guy, what can we say about the discriminant of this guy, this original polynomial? But that was also pointed by Banika, that actually if we can show that this guy discriminant is cube free, then this original polynomial is square free, so which is pretty wonderful. But then on the other hand, we still can't compute the discriminant of this guy, so I was not able to utilize that. Now, but then, so basically the direction I could take was to give up about discriminant. So what can you do about it? So now from here, let me talk about the irreducibility issue later if I have time, and let me go on assuming that we are done with irreducibility issue. Okay? So now what we have to use, actually this discriminant issue is in fact sort of the early part of algebraic number theory, and at this point I had to get into more pages on this number theory textbook. But then I got a great help, and so that actually I put on a first slide, and from this point on, this work is joint work with Yasuda at Kyoto University. Now, the major ingredient of the following the argument for the proof for the goal is Islamification. So what it is, what's about ramification? So when you think about the field extension, well, in our case, we just only worry about Q and Q together with some algebraic integer. And then let's okay be a ring of integers, which is ring of algebraic integers contained in K. And ring of integer of Q is, of course, Z. And now, let's think about the prime number in Z. And then, of course, it will generate a prime ideal in Z. But then now, if you think about a prime ideal generated by prime in this larger ring, this OK contains Z, and then that's not necessarily prime anymore. But then, actually, this ring OK is so-called dedicated ring. I'm not going to tell you what the definition is, but nice thing about dedicated ring is that there is this unique factorization theorem on ideals into prime ideals. So now, this is what this number theory people worry about. And let me give some definitions about this thing. So let's get rid of this. So these are the main definitions of the thing that I use. So by the way, so this factorization into primes, these primes fitting in OK, they all have a property that if you look at the intersection with Z, then it has to be P. And this multiplicity fit on the shoulder of P are called ramification index. And also the thing that since PIs are prime, okay, if you take a quotient of that, that will give you a field. And then that is actually a field extension of Z mod P, because as you see, Z is including it, okay, so there is an embedding. And then the if you think about if you think about the quotient by PI, this real PI, then this original prime ideal P is in the kernel, so it will extend to the mapping from this field K into KI. So it is a field extension, and we define the degree of the field extension by HI, and you call it degree of PI. And these numbers are going to be pretty important, so I have to emphasize that. Now, so the number theory people are concerned about how each prime factor, ramifies or factors into the product of P for different, the case of different field extension. And then here's a very, very wonderful theorem. There are actually two wonderful theorems. So the first one is, I'm not sure which one of them proved. I think one of them did it for a special case and the other one did it for a general case. But what I want is actually a little bit special case. So say you have algebraic integer, and then you have minimal polynomial f, and then suppose you have a prime which does not factor ratio of this discriminant of f and discriminant of k. I'm not telling you what they are, but let me note that this still requires some condition about the discriminant. So we have to get rid of it later. But then if you have p like this, and then now this minimum polynomial of a, it's an irreducible polynomial as a polynomial of z. But then if you think about mod p, then they may not be irreducible anymore, so they factor into some irreducible components like that. And then suppose they factor into like this, where these guys are all distinct now, then actually you can say that the splitting of this prime ideal P exactly follows the rule here, where this each prime ideal actually corresponds to each factor of F mod P, and this power the same, and also this degree of each prime ideal is equal to degree of each polynomial here. That's a wonderful theorem. And then another theorem I'm not sure who is this, like some older people. I mean, dead people. So. But if actually a fluid extension is gamma, then this splitting of P into time ideal is of this form, that basically all these ramification index are all the same, and also degree of the time ideal is also the same. So, so these are pretty nice stuff, and we have to figure out how to utilize this. And now, so why did I mention about Galoshing? Actually, the thing that if you have a cyclotomic integer, then actually this extension of QD, say integer D, and extension of QD where Q is necessarily Galois, it's because this QD has to be sitting in some cyclotomic field, but then Galois group of cyclotomic field over Q is abelian, and then all these subgroups of abelian groups are all normal. And from this Galois theory, things, if you have normal subgroups, then the corresponding extension has to be Galois extension. So this means that if these are cyclotomic integer, this extension has to be Galois. So this means that actually this splitting or this ramification of prime ideal has to follow this rule. Okay. But then now, so it almost looks like then we have the strong condition of the factorization of polynomial combining these two guys, because this is the splitting of prime, then F has to be the same form. But then here the problem, because I have this condition of prime involving this discriminant, but discriminant is exactly the thing that I didn't want to deal with. And then we have to modify this theorem. So the thing is that so this direction, that a number of many people want to find how the prime factorize, but then what I want is how polynomial has to factorize. And this direction actually is not so bad. And here we got this following theorem. Though I say we got it, but it's sort of classical thing, and it's kind of too easy to claim to be theorem. But anyway, what you can say is this. If you have this Galois extension of this QA over Q, and let's say F is minimum polynomial, suppose this for some prime P, any prime P, you pick any one, and suppose they split this way, we know that this must be this form because the extension is Galois, then actually the polynomial has to factorize in this way, where it's very similar to, let me put this up here. It's very similar to this correspondence, but in this case, we don't assume that this F is irreducible, but F has to be of the form of power of some other polynomial, and this some other polynomial for that is actually corresponding to minimum polynomial of this algebraic integer that you started with, but projected onto the in the quotient field. Okay, so now, so this actually gives a strong control, meaning that this means that if you look at the minimum polynomial of this square of Perron-Fermi's eigenvalue, and then if we can find some nice P, and if the factorization is not of this form, then this means that actually the assumption that this square of Perron-Fermi's eigenvalue was cyclotomic must have been wrong. So here, that's the direction, and well, of course, like I said, I skipped the part of irreducibility for now. So now, direction is that we have to come up with an appropriate P in order to derive a contradiction. So what you do, for technical reason, it's easier to think about dk was the square of Perron-Fermi's, and that minus 2, it's easier to deal with that guy. And the minimum polynomial for that guy is just, obviously, just shifted from the minimum polynomial of this old guy. And stuff. And then now, what you can say, these are a little bit before minimum polynomial. This may have this factor of, in this case, x plus 1, so it may not be reducible. But this style follows nice recursive relation, so we prefer to work on this style, the minimum polynomial itself. Now, what you can say, see is that if you actually plug in 0 for this p and p prime, then we get this sort of nice expression. But then what that implies is this. This means that if you have this prime that factors to k plus 1, then if you think about this polynomial pk minus 1 mod p, then it has to contain a factor of x with multiplicity 1, because if p factors to k plus 1, then automatically p does not factorize k. So this means that pk minus 0 is 0 mod p, and the prime is not 0 mod p. So this means that in mod p, if you look at this condition, with this choice of p, it implies that because x appears only with multiplicity 1, it means that both this, suppose this x was corresponding to f1, then that's irreducible, so that ei has to be 1, and this e has to be also 1. And then this means that f has to factorize into some product of linear terms like this. And then, I should have written the arrow the other way around, actually. Okay. So now, this actually is a pretty strong situation, and I would like to explain only for the easiest case. The easiest case is when 2k plus 1 is such that there is a prime that factorizes 2k plus 1, and you can choose that prime to be larger than 3, but also smaller than 2k plus 1, meaning 2k plus 1 is not prime in this case. I mean, in such case, so what is the restriction? The thing is that I wrote f, but I meant pk minus 1. So the degree of this pk minus 1 is, the degree is 2k. And so we have basically 2k times, like, over here together with x. And now, then, if you can restrict the multiplicity of these guys over here, then basically we need this many distinct terms. But then, since the element in Z mod p is only p, so you can derive the contradiction by saying that we don't have sufficiently many distinct terms over here because of the restriction of element in p, and indeed that's sort of how it goes for this case. And in fact, you can compute that the multiplicity of linear term has to be at most 4, and from that you can say that, okay, then we can't have sufficiently many distinct terms. And for the case that 2k plus 1 is prime, or for the case that the only prime that divides 2k plus 1 is 3, well, meaning 2k plus 1 is power of 3, then we have some more technical issues that we have to deal with. But more or less, in a similar argument, we can derive the contradiction. So, what did we get? So, the conclusion is that indeed the square of the Perron-Sabins eigenvalues of these graphs cannot be cyclotomic integer, therefore these graphs cannot be principal graphs for the case k is larger than 1. So that's sort of the main part. And now, since I have 5 more minutes, let me briefly talk about how we do the irreducibility issue. So the thing is that, like I said, I want here, where was that? So this f has to be minimum polynomial. This means that our polynomial has to be irreducible. So we have to prove the irreducibility in order to use all these things. And so now, for this, we use this new polynomial after changing the variable in a quite essential way. So there is this some ancient theorem. I think it's by Dirichlet, but I'm not sure. They say that if you have an algebraic integer, and suppose your algebraic integer fits in some field extension, then you can think about the Galois conjugate there. Suppose all the gamma conjugates, including this guy itself, has all absolute value 1, then actually this number has to be root of unity. This is a pretty important part. And now one thing to note is this, that the root of this polynomial after changing variable, in fact, they are either real, or complex with absolute value 1. And these are things to use. So here is one thing to prove. And I tell you why this implies irreducibility. Now, we prove that this polynomial after changing variable has only one root, let's say alpha, in 0,1 interval. And by some symmetry, that also implies that there is only one root between 1 and infinity. And also, it is pretty easy to verify that there is no negative real root. And so from here, you can say there is only two real roots. So everybody else is complex. And like I said, they all have no absolute value 1. Now, that implies the following though. Suppose this polynomial is not irreducible. Suppose this first irreducible component contains alpha as 0. Then the other root of other polynomial has to be root of unity. It's because if they do exist, then the root has to be root of this original polynomial, of course. But then we know that absolute value is 1. And then, because these guys are irreducible in form, the Galois conjugate of that guy is going to go over the root of this guy. And since they are all absolute value 1, so from this ancient theorem, they have to be root of unity. And now, so from here, what you can say, do is, if you can prove that there is no root for this polynomial, that is also a root of unity, then you can say that these other irreducible components cannot exist. Because if they do, the root has to be root of unity. And this way you can prove that this is irreducible. And that's sort of the sketch of the argument. Okay, so I think I can stop here.